This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
They thought they'd get away with it until now. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
The case against Richard Allen continues to beg more questions of what exactly happened in Delphi, Indiana in 2017 when Libby German and Abigail Williams lost their lives out near the Monon High Bridge. The trial well underway. Joining me to discuss what is going on in this case, where it is likely to go, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Jennifer, we've seen a lot of testimony thus far. We've seen various experts come and go. We're more than a week now into our trial. What has been your reaction to what we've seen so far?
I think my number one reaction is the frustration of having to rely on the eyes and ears and perception of podcasters and reporters rather than being able to see it in a fluid state of evidence, for me to look at. It's so frustrating. And I'm sure that all your listeners, everyone has to be frustrated with that. You look at different people's perception and it comes off a little bit different on each one. And particularly when you're talking about expert testimony and testimony about all the cell phone extractions, those are pieces that really need to be evaluated by listening to them rather than getting what people are saying, at least from my view, because you're looking at a reporter that's never done an extraction or been a part of that process ever in their life. And then they're giving you their rundown of what they believe happened. So I find myself extremely frustrated with the lack of transparency, although they're doing the best they can.
True. I mean, we have Judge Gold to thank for that. But and I agree, we have many people in that courtroom reporting on it. We have one person there reporting on it as well. And I found it interesting, almost after the second day, I had a friend of mine who's been reporting on it for their own channel, talked about their observations of Richard Allen in the courtroom being almost, kind of shaky, rocking back and forth when the images of the girls were shown after the crimes were committed. I had another friend who was in that very same courtroom saying, he looks fine. He's not rocking back and forth. He's talking to his attorneys. But it's like the same perspective from two different people that I very much trust that have no reason to tell me otherwise, but it's just how they're interpreting what is actually going on. It's amazing how different those interpretations can be. And that's just on the one thing. We're talking about interpretation of evidence. We're talking interpretation of witness testimony and such. And you're right. It all goes through an individual prism and it can be very different from person to person.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the biggest items, I think, is cellular data and information. And I say that because it doesn't have an opinion. Mm-hmm. I love digital evidence. I love DNA evidence. All of that is what it is. And it's facts that can't be disputed, really. But when you look at, as an example, Richard's devices, 23 devices that were gleaned from the home, but supposedly none connect him to any of the victims, that's a big problem for the prosecution. Mm-hmm. So is it because they're missing the device that had all that information and the other 23 didn't? Some people are looking at it that way. I'm not really looking at it that way. Why would he keep the Cohart jacket? Why would he keep the gun? Why would he, say he was there if he was trying to conceal something? Oh, yeah, but I'm going to conceal that one device. And plus, why not go to the carriers? All the carriers know the devices that any individual mm-hmm. have. They sure. keep it on their log. So I've just... It's another area that I had hoped would be dogmatic, that would be mm-hmm. practical to look at, and now it's not. Now it's another opinion.
That's to me, I agree. It felt to me like, okay, digital footprint, that's going to give us some information here. And it seems like the investigation only went so far into looking up the information on that specific device. And I don't know if they think their crux is, he doesn't have that phone from 2017. What's he trying to hide? Well, I'd love to ask everyone in that courtroom, who still has your phone? Who can even tell you what device you were using in 2023 and where that device is today, or in 2017 and where that device is today? I don't think a lot of us could actually answer that question. But yeah, go to the carriers, get the data there if there's anything to find. The fact that they did look at 23 of Richard Allen's devices, and granted, yes, they do say that the phone he had at that time is no longer around. I'm not shocked by that. I don't necessarily look at that as something that was hidden, though, either. The fact that they found nothing, no internet searches, nothing that seemed to make him look like he was premeditatedly planning this attack, which one would assume you would have had to have done if this is what you want to go do. It would be very bizarre for this CVS worker just to randomly go for a walk when they decided to kill two girls and then go on about life like absolutely nothing occurred. The fact that there's nothing on this digital footprint, what does that say to you about his innocence or guilt?
Well, it's huge to me because at the crux of this crime is a sexually motivated, deviant murder against underage girls that is a sign of a pedophile, mm-hmm. right? So what you would expect to see on a pedophile's phone that would commit a crime like this is a child pornography.
Yeah.
Where's the child pornography? Where's the pictures of girls? Where are the gross pictures of other, you know, murder mm-hmm. scenes or horror scenes that this person would have used to excite themselves sexually? Because at the crux of this crime, it is a sexually motivated, you know, murder.
Yeah.
And to have 23 devices of an individual, and again, even that part's cloudy to me. Were they the moms? Were they the daughters? Were they anybody else's, you know, that were left there? I mean, that's a lot of devices.
Yeah.
You know, I'm unclear on that. Were any of the devices pre-2017? And is there really a gap?
Yeah, another question.
It's all nebulous, and all it tells me is if you have 23 devices of this horrible killer with nothing to do with child porn, you are barking up the wrong tree. That's just generally my perception of that.
I agree. The DNA, or lack thereof, again, another big part. We're talking two girls who were attacked in the woods, had their throats slit, and not one sign of Richard Allen's DNA on either of them. Now, there's other cases where this happens, too. There's no sign of DNA on the actual bodies. Usually there's something found somewhere. Sometimes there's nothing. That's kind of rare, but it does happen. But this, I mean, it's out in the woods. It's not really an area where you can, you know, clean up a lot of things super easily, I would think. And they didn't see a man walking around out there in a, you know, like a hazmat suit or something that he immediately changed out of after killing two girls. That too, that's another part to this case that doesn't make a lot of sense of there's no evidence that puts him there DNA-wise or and even by eyewitness accounts.
There's no eyewitness accounts because they're all over the board, mm-hmm. shotgun, whether you're talking about the vehicle or whether you're talking about the description, it's all over the board. Mm-hmm. To say that because somebody has a cohort jacket, a similar jacket to what Bridge Guy wore, that's absurd.
Yeah.
Do you know how many cohort jackets are worn by individuals out there?
Yes.
The other thing is the hat really is interesting to me. The hat that you can see in the sketch that was drawn, mm-hmm. it's kind of a one of those hats, I call them a driver cap, like the driving Miss Daisy, what you
sure.
wear. That cap, where is it?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? Has he ever worn one of those in the past?
Mm-hmm.
I have seen no pictures of that. You know, the prosecution would bring that up. I don't see anything about that.
Yeah.
It's all right now, without hearing these 61 confessions. Oh my gosh. I can't even see probable cause right now.
I'm shocked by that too. I was hoping that they would be proving us all wrong. Not that I hope Richard Allen is guilty, but I'm hoping they're going to figure out who the hell did this for the sake of these families. And if it's him, it's him. But I was thinking, just by the way they were so just belligerent, and the state is what I'm talking about, how Gull was so belligerent outside to any of their requests, any of their motions, to the public questioning, to the pressure that was put on it. We got our guy. We got our guy. Okay, well, let's see in court what you got. They got nothing. I mean, they're really not presenting a strong case. I was hoping there's a lot of things behind the curtain that we are just unaware of, and they're going to prove us wrong. They're proving their incompetency even better than I think we ever thought.
Well, you know, one of the pieces of evidence that came out that is confusing to me is the note where he says, "I'm ready to confess."
Yeah.
And if you compare that, and again, we don't have the actual note. We have a replica where, in other words, that reporter's looking at it, and then on his notes or her notes, they're writing, they're mm-hmm. taking care to make it look exactly the same, right? Where
yeah.
capitals or slanted or mm-hmm. inserted at different places. But compare that note to the note he wrote when he wanted counsel. Mm-hmm. I mean, the note where he wanted counsel is beautiful writing. Mm-hmm. It's all, I mean, comparatively, it's all in line. It's well organized. That note that was presented, it looks like either the ravings of a madman or of a young child.
Yes.
It's a hot mess. And I just don't understand what changed that would make one's style go from, when you're asking for attorney, big deal. When you're getting ready to confess, a big deal, that the writing would change so strangely.
Well, a mental breakdown is what would cause
exactly
that. Being tortured for a year in solitary confinement when you haven't done anything wrong. That's what I think would lead to that. What's been your reaction thus far on the confessions themselves? Because this was a big one going in. We got 60 confessions, and all they've shown us thus far is a piece of paper, like you said, that looks like it was written by a madman or a child. I would say a drunk child at that, because I think even like a regular child that's not under the influence of something could probably write better. So I'm going to go with drunk 11-year-old writing that one is another possibility. But what about the confession? We've yet to hear one. I thought, you know, I think that was a big thing we were all thinking of. Okay, let's hear the audio of these confessions from the prison. We haven't heard anything. And I'm wondering why that is.
Well, you know, it's back to the order of proof. So whenever you're putting a case like this together, typically what happens is the prosecutor is going to sit down with the investigators, and they're going to work very deliberately on putting together the order of proof that's most convincing for a jury. Mm-hmm. Personally, for me, I see what they're doing. You know, they first of all want to shock the jury with all those photos, the autopsy photos. They want to grab the jury and say, somebody is going to pay for that. Mm-hmm. And guess what? We got the somebody, and he's sitting right there.
Yeah.
So I'm not at all surprised with that order that they decided to come out with. And now they're kind of doing this chronology. And I think they realize that their witnesses are weak, super weak, and their evidence is weak. So they're kind of getting this over right now in a lull, and then they want to hit home, I think, with the confessions and the ballistic information to have the last thing in the jurors' minds. So I think that that's, Tony, why they're doing the order of proof this way.
Do you think we're going to hear confessions? We're going to hear the actual audio of him making those confessions? Or do you think maybe that audio is just so weak and really the ravings of a madman that it's not really usable?
Well, they're going to have to play the confessions, I think, and introduce them. If they don't, they will be extremely remiss. But it's up to the prosecution to decide. I think the most important confessions, though, are the ones made early on. I believe there were 5, 4 to the wife and 1 to the mother. Mm-hmm. Those are most important because one could argue that, well, the other 50 some odd were made to make him look crazy, mm-hmm. and that really the good ones, the real ones, are the first 5. So I want to see what's in the first 5.
Yeah.
If they start picking and choosing, in other words, there's 61 and they take number you know, 1 and 15 and 40,
yeah.
That says what they want to say. Hopefully the defense, and the defense seems to be on top of this, hopefully the defense will, you know, point that out and, yeah. and play the other ones. The defense for sure should play all 61.
I want to hear all 60. I want to hear every single one that is recorded and on the record, because I think that will show a very interesting human being right there. And it could go either way, I guess. But I don't think we're going to hear a very competent human being making all of those. Or it may digress, or it may, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. Let's talk about the ballistics here, because that seems to be the only thing that the prosecution thinks they have going for them, of this unspent bullet that was found on the ground after all of the officers came into the scene and took a look at it. And so God knows how many you had wandering around there at the scene. And if you just kind of play the odds of maybe somebody dropping a bullet, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 officers wandering around this crime scene versus the one man who was walking around dropping a bullet who said he had nothing to do with it, was just out there hiking. I think your odds are clearly in one direction. But they have the argument of, well, it fits like it would have gone through his gun. The markings show that, which is also a science that's not super reliable. Why? What do they have here on this bullet that really they think they can show went through his gun and it wasn't cycled through any other of the many other guns who would have been on that scene from the officers?
Well, to me, the biggest item that I hope the defense did, and I don't know, I did see they already had one of their experts kicked out. I think they're called a metallurgist, mm-hmm. Basically somebody to talk about metal markings, but they weren't a firearms expert, had never testified about firearms. And so the Judge Gold said, you're out. Mm-hmm. But hopefully the tool marks expert, and that's what they're called, either hopefully has FBI experience, if not ATF experience, that are truly experts. In other words, that's what they did all day long, was sit in their chair and look at tool marks on cartridges and on, you know, on bullets, on mm-hmm. spent rounds and so on. Hopefully that's what they've got. If they have someone like that, then I'll say again,
yeah.
hopefully they actually examined his gun.
Where is
against
his gun?
That. Well, it should be in evidence.
Yeah.
But they should have pulled that out. And I never saw any orders along this line. And I tell you, I think this could be major, because you saw in the ruling by the judge just yesterday, I believe it was, saying, listen, plus, this guy, not only is he not a firearms expert, he is not an expert in terms of, he didn't look at it. He didn't look at Richard Allen's gun. He didn't conduct any ballistic shooting from Richard Allen's gun or ejection of a bullet from Richard Allen's gun. That's a big problem. So I'm hopeful that the defense knew to get Richard Allen's gun out of lockup, the evidence room, and actually perform these tests. What I also hope they did, or what they should have done, was taken similar Sig Sauer 40 caliber handguns and maybe tested 100 of them mm-hmm. that were produced in that exact same year, and even tried to find some that maybe had in the similar serial number strand, and see if the tool mark left from the ejector and the extractor match. Mm-hmm. That would be an amazing expert. If they get somebody on the stand that hasn't examined his gun and how it treated another bullet, mm-hmm. they're going to be in big trouble, the defense.
I know I've been hearing over and over, like, that science is kind of How, give me your opinion. You're the firearms expert here. Is that a super reliable science to say, okay, this gun made this mark and there's zero possibility or very little possibility that it came from another? Or when you have this type of bullet and this type of gun and it's from the same similar type era of years, is it going to produce pretty much the same results, or are they all that unique?
It's not an exact science. It's certainly not DNA. It's certainly not a fingerprint. And it's certainly not like rifling on a bullet that produces its own fingerprint, mm-hmm. if you will, as it goes inside a particular barrel and spins out. So that's even more reliable. But this is actually the marks. If you can imagine a bullet sitting there and it needs to be extracted and ejected. So it's extracted is one mark that's made by the extractor, and the ejector makes another mark. So they're going to look to see if those marks on that casing perfectly match what it looks like when Richard Allen's are manually ejected and extracted. I know that's a lot to go through and visualize.
Yeah.
But essentially, that's what they're going to be looking at. And so, no, it's not exact, because the problem is all of those guns that were made at that time should have somewhat similar markings. So we're going to see whether it's truly exact or it's just kind of similar. And that's where you have a problem, kind of like handwriting.
Yeah. Where does this go if Richard Allen is found innocent? If they go, enough reasonable doubt here. Because there really isn't a lot of evidence that truly ties him to the crime, at least not that we've seen yet. How does Delphi handle that? I mean, they've been so gung-ho that this is the guy for all these years. If he's not, your killer's been out there for all these years now, nearly a decade.
Well, I will say, Tony, you pose a great question, but in these types of cases, when you have the gore and the anger that is going to be in the eyes of those jurors, just like it's been in the eyes of the public. Mm-hmm. They're looking out at the family. The family is sitting behind law enforcement and sitting, you know, behind the prosecutor. And they want somebody, they're probably going to want somebody to pay.
Yeah.
And so when in trials like this, that are so egregious like this, and then you have law enforcement put on the stand with years and years of experience, and you know, and you allow them to give their opinions on what was said, on what happened, which is what you have here. He may be convicted despite somebody who really analyzes the facts. It just says, no, let's clean it all up and let's just look at facts. It's problematic to me at this point.
Yeah.
But it's going to come down to the confessions. But shoot, if he's if he were found not guilty, oh my gosh.
I mean,
he will be a rich man.
Yeah.
Probably a ruined person. I mean, he's ruined.
Yeah. There'd be massive lawsuits against the city and all of that. But if you have some of these same people on the force, they're going to have to re-examine this. They're gonna have to eat some crow and go, all the things that we thought we knew wrong, and you got to kind of start from ground zero. I mean, it's not like there's not other suspects here either that clearly should have been looked at in greater detail. They kind of have a good starting point on some of them, it seems, but I just wonder if this just goes down, you know, and it's like, well, we thought it was him, we still think it's him, but he got away, and then it's just kind of left into the ether and we never know who killed these kids.
Yeah, you know, I go back and I saw on the witness list is the FBI agent who put together the probable cause affidavit that indicated it was Ron Logan. Now, remember, Ron Logan just lived about 1,000 feet from where all of this occurred. It's all on his land. Yeah. Easy place to go clean up. He falsified an alibi. He had somebody lie for him about an alibi. Some people want to argue, oh, they did that because he didn't want to get caught driving on a suspended license. No, that's not why. He had somebody fabricate a lie. He drove all the time. So, I don't know. He also wore those Cohart jackets. He looks exactly like the original mugshot. His girlfriend said that was his voice on the recording. I mean, there's a lot of probable cause to point at him. He's deceased. Did they do it in tandem with anybody? How come Keegan Klein was setting up an appointment to meet somebody and they just happened to be there and get murdered? I mean, there's so much that I don't know if the jury will ever see.
Yeah.
But this is a bad, I just don't like the facts in this case. I'm hoping they have the right guy and that he's not getting railroaded.
Well, and if they don't have the right guy and maybe the right guy is dead, I don't know where that goes, but I mean, there's certainly a spotlight on several other people that goes, clearly they should look at this. It looks like they were probably involved in some way, shape, or form. And none of those people happens to be Richard Allen. That's the shocking part of all of this. The man that's standing trial has like the least amount on him. And it's just, it's mind blowing, but it is what it is. We'll see where this all goes and what a jury ultimately decides with what they are allowed to hear in the trial of Richard Allen. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today, Premium Plus, on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today, Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today, Premium Plus, on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.